Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Creating Sacred Spaces by Lama Kathy Wesley. As the Columbus KTC rebuilding project enters the final phase of basic construction, Lama Kathy will talk about the virtue and inspiration behind creating the Columbus KTC's new shrine room and how we can create sacred spaces of our own in our homes. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning. This is Lama Kathy Wesley coming to you on behalf of the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center with our Sunday 11:30 a.m. Dharma Talk for today. Today's topic is creating sacred spaces. And I had several different ideas of how to approach this topic. But I figured all in all, the best place to approach this topic and the best way to approach this topic is from my own sacred space. So those of you who know me know that I have my own little shrine room here at my house. And I've been very fortunate to live in a couple of different places, whether they're apartments or homes. And in a couple of these, I've been able to have my own shrine room. And the shrine room that I have now is about 10 foot by 12 feet. It's very small, but it reminds me a little bit of my three-year retreat room, which was 10 feet by 10 feet. It was nice, small, cozy, and just enough. The shrine you see behind me here is my White Tara shrine. And then the shrine you see behind me here is my main shrine. And then over in the corner is a small shrine that has all of my books, my Dharma books and so forth on it. And I'm going to be talking a little bit with you this morning about how to create your own sacred space and why to create your own sacred space. So before I begin, I'd like to say a prayer in English, the prayer of taking refuge. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. Now I'll recite one other short prayer. Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chi War Pede Denshudla, Kadran Jambukane Jesunde, Kusuntuking Adrip Sadu So. That last prayer was in the Tibetan language, and it is a prayer to one's root lama, asking for the blessings of the lama's body, speech, and mind. So the topic is sacred spaces. I think the reason that I wanted to talk about this was twofold. Number one, the Columbus KTC is getting closer and closer to having its own sacred space, its new home on Rich Street in Columbus, Ohio. But also because I talk to a lot of Dharma friends on a weekly basis, and they all need support for their Dharma practice. And it struck me that a sacred space or creating a sacred space in your own home might help you with your Buddhist practice. And I'll tell you the reason why. We all, according to the teachings of the Buddha, the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, we all have Buddha nature. And that means we have a mind that has the capacity to awaken to its own nature. We have a mind that has the capacity to understand itself and understand itself completely, know itself completely, and give birth to the wisdom and compassion that is inherent in each of us as an individual. So each of us have the potential to become Buddha. And this is, for me, one of the central teachings of Buddhism that gives me hope, and it gives me a feeling and sense of purpose. Because if we all have Buddha nature, that means we all have the potential to awaken to that nature and then to benefit other beings. So I often tell people that the teachings on Buddha nature are a key teaching on self-worth, and offer individuals a source of self-worth that doesn't have to be earned. It's automatic. Everybody has it. And it's also a reason why we should give respect and show respect to ourselves and other beings, because all beings that have a mind have within them the Buddha potential. So in any case, I just wanted to start with that idea, and to say that that we all have the potential to awaken. And having this potential to awaken doesn't mean that we will automatically awaken. It means that we have the potential, and that we need to realize that nature. We need to bring it to fruition. And how do we do that? We do that through the practices of the Dharma, the Buddha's teaching. Do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So these four statements summarize how we are to uncover and live out our Buddha nature. Do no harm. Don't harm yourself. Don't harm others. Practice virtue. Take care of yourself and benefit others. And tame your mind means to meditate so that you can realize the Buddha potential within. This is the teaching of the Buddha, means that there is no other. Look no further. So in any case, just because we have Buddha nature, though, does not guarantee that we will uncover that Buddha nature. So what we have to do is we have to nurture that Buddha nature. We have to find a place where we can be with our practice of Dharma, and a place where we can apply our practice of Dharma and realize our Buddha nature. So to me, this is the real reason behind creating a sacred space, is to nurture the Buddha that's within, and to attempt to bring about a conducive condition for the realization of our Buddha nature. So what constitutes a sacred space? Well, you know, in Old Tibet, if you are familiar with the story of the great poet, Saint Milarepa, he had a cave. And this cave, he had actually many caves. He had several caves. And in fact, he loved his caves so much that he composed songs to them. As you know, Milarepa was famous for composing spontaneous poetry and realization songs. And he would often sing about the qualities of his caves, high in the mountains, secluded, and nurturing, giving him a place to practice and be. And so that's what I think the qualities that our sacred space have to have. I myself don't think I would do well in a cave, but after having read parts of Jetsunma Tenzin Palmo's biography, Cave in the Snow, I guess it is possible to be comfortable in a cave. So I like my creature comforts. So here I am in a house. But so what do we need? We need to have several things. One of the things that we need to have is solitude. And I think that solitude is an important part of our sacred space. And but solitude doesn't mean it's like completely quiet. And solitude doesn't mean that it's completely without distraction, but we have to try to promote a sense of solitude. So that's the beginning, is solitude. Solitude means that we absent ourselves from our, and detach from our daily situation. And that solitude can be in a room, or it can actually be in a corner of a room, or it can be in a, what do they call them now? She sheds. I have to say that very carefully. A little detached shed in the backyard. I have a friend who has one in her backyard, and she uses it as her writing office. So whether you have a detached shed for your meditation, or at one point I had a sun porch for my meditation room, or like my friend who lives over in Granville, what she did was that she got one of those folding Asian screens, and she actually put it in one of the corners of her room, right by a window, because I have a window over here. So she put it right in this little space, and she put her meditation seat right behind that. And that allowed her some quiet time. Even though it was in her busy bedroom, she had lots going on, people, you know, doing this and that and so forth and so on. That helped her to have a place where she could be on her own and practice. And another one of my friends actually has one of those walk-in closets, and has made a walk-in closet into a meditation room. And I think all of these are great ideas. The only places that my teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, told people not to create a meditation seat in was in a busy hallway. He said, don't put your meditation seat in a busy hallway, because he said people will be coming and going. It'll be too distracting for you. Or a room that is full of busyness. Now, of course, I have to also say that good meditators will eventually learn how to deal with lack of solitude. In other words, some people, because of their roles in the family, are not going to have solitude. I think of a practitioner that I know who, when her children were young, she would actually set up a little table with her pecha, which is what we call a Tibetan prayer book. And she would set up her Tibetan prayer book on this little table in front of her sofa. And then her kids would be running around wildly while she was doing her mantras. And for her, her solitude was internal. She was present with her family, but her solitude, her dedication to solitude, was internal. So that when the kids were getting ready to go to school, I visited her one morning. And the kids were getting ready to go to school. They were grabbing their lunches. They were doing this and that. And one of them stopped and said, "Hey, Mom." And Mom looked up from her practice book and said, "Yes." And the child asked the question about after school activities, and Mom said, "Yes." So then Mom went back to her recitation of mantras. And I think that this really talks about how you don't have to have a perfectly quiet or peaceful environment to practice, but it helps. And so His Eminence Taisi Trumbache gave a great teaching on solitude. He said solitude is a mental state, and he said it consists of being willing to detach from your situations, from your involvements, for just a short period of time. And he said that it's important to practice as though you have all the time in the world. He said, practice as though you have all the time in the world. That's a good way to get internal solitude, because if we're watching our watches all the time, it is kind of difficult to practice, because we're always going to feel a little bit under the gun and feel a little bit like we have to rush through our meditation. So solitude, although it's great, can also be had in busy environments. But according to Kempo Carter Rinpoche, it's best to start with a sacred space that is somewhat removed. And according to Sitra Rinpoche, it's good to practice as though you have all the time in the world, giving yourself some internal space to practice. Of course, this advice was given before the time of cell phones, which, as you can see, the fact that it is this close to me is like scary, right? But we have availability now to our friends and family and the world in ways we never had before, which is not necessarily a good thing for practice. So what you can do is you can use the now prevalent do not disturb feature on your cell phone to give yourself some of that solitude that you need for your practice. And I have a watch, and my watch and my phone are connected, so I can put the do not disturb on my watch and it'll work on the phone also. So, I mean, these are things we can do to give ourselves physical space for practice, but also internal space for practice. And there's another way to give yourself some internal space for practice, and that is becoming familiar with the four thoughts that turn the mind toward Dharma. The four thoughts that turn the mind toward the Dharma. The four thoughts are a way of contemplating. And the first of the four thoughts is the preciousness of our situation, the preciousness of our human life. The fact that no matter where we have been, no matter who we have been, we are still alive, and we still have Buddha nature, and we still have the capacity to become a Buddha. Reflecting on that gives us a feeling of gratitude, which is really a good environment for our practice. The second is impermanence. And impermanence is something that we may not think is a happy thing to discuss, because it talks about change, sickness, death, and so on. But if we reflect on impermanence, this means we always have a chance to remake ourselves. We always have the chance to start fresh. We always have the chance to begin again. And so impermanence means that we need to recognize with gratitude the opportunity that it's impermanence, and putting first our Dharma practice whenever we can. So that's another way to create an internal environment for practicing Dharma. The third of the four thoughts that turn the mind toward Dharma is karma, action, cause, and result. And action, cause, and result means that what we do, think, and say makes impressions upon ourselves and creates momentum for us either in positive directions or in negative directions. So we try our best to promote internal thoughts, feelings, and emotions that bring us to the thought of benefiting ourselves, benefiting others, and helping others, and being kind, and learning about wisdom, and practicing the Dharma. So when we think about karma and how we are making our future with every thought, word, and action, this is an attempt to bring us to more healthy, sacred spaces within us. And the last of the four thoughts is about the defects of samsara. Those of you who are familiar with Buddhist terminology will know that the word samsara means cyclic existence, the cyclic existence that is of the nature of suffering. And the Buddha talked about this and said that for those of us who wish to escape from samsara, we may need to first think about its defects. For example, on a day like today, it's incredibly beautiful outside. The sky is blue, and it doesn't appear that there's a cloud in the sky right now. So we might actually think, well, maybe I should take advantage of this day by going out and having a good time, going to see my family and friends and so forth. We might not be thinking about sitting indoors in our sacred space to do some Dharma. But if we think about the fact that impermanence and so on leads all of samsara, even the happy parts of samsara, to be incredibly pretty short, that we need to think about those and reflect on those so that we, again, will put ourselves toward activities that have lasting impact. So in any case, these things are how we can create a sacred space externally through solitude, external solitude, and how we can create a sacred space internally through inner solitude of recognizing the value of Dharma practice and recognizing the need that we have for Dharma practice. And when we talk about reflecting on the defects of samsara, we can reflect on something else, which is the benefits of Dharma practice. Whatever kind of Dharma practice we do, whether it is whether the benefit, the Dharma practice that we do is mantra practice, like the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, which removes so many defects in our personality and promotes so many qualities. Whether it's the recitation of the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, the quiet sitting meditation, the compassion meditation, Tonglen, regardless of what we do, if we can reflect on the benefits of Dharma practice, this will also help provide some of that internal solitude that we need for our practice. And that's a little bit about solitude, but there's something else that will help us when we create a sacred space. And that is, we'll call it upliftment and inspiration. This is something that our sacred space can provide us with. Now, as you can see, I'm a bit of a nerd, and I'm kind of nerdy, and I'm a shrine nerd, and I love to collect things, and I've been a Buddhist for like 40 years, which is like way longer than some folks have been alive. And so I've had all this time to collect. And you can see on the very top shelf of my shrine, I have images of the Buddha and so forth and so on. But you don't have to have something this fancy. But representations of the three jewels, the three jewels of refuge, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the representations of the three jewels are great to have in front of you. So for some people, that consists of having a Buddha image. I have to give a shout out to my friend Joseph for giving me this incredibly cool. Yes, it's plastic. Well, it could be something, but it's plastic, I think. This great plastic sitting Buddha. It's really amazing. And he asked me to hold on to it until I found somebody who needed it. So I don't have anybody who needs it yet, but its day will come. For now, it's sitting in my shrine cabinet. But whether you have a simple image of the Buddha like this, or like my first Buddha was just a cardboard picture of the Buddha given to me by Kempo Kartha Rinpoche. Or you can go truly upscale and get a lovely a statue from one of the many Tibetan gift shops online, and give it to your teacher, and your teacher will fill this statue from top to bottom with mantras, and there's even a little Buddha relic inside the heart. This is called statue consecration. And if it's fine to have any image of the Buddha, because this one obviously has nothing inside it, but it serves as an upliftment. It uplifts the space and it reminds us of our Buddha nature. It gives us what I like to call a location for your aspiration. So whether it's a consecrated statue, a photograph, a picture, a resin image, or whatever, it is a representation of the Buddha, the first of the three jewels, the Buddha as our teacher. And the second is the Dharma, or the practices and teachings of the Buddha. This is a Tibetan book. This is, I believe, this one could be the Bodhicharya Avatara, which is the guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life. written by Shantideva. And I love to have a Dharma book on my shrine to remind me of the teachings of the Buddha and to remind me of how valuable these teachings are to cause our liberation. The Buddha is no longer with us, so we have to follow his regent, the Dharma. So having a Dharma book on your shrine is another good thing. Now, you don't need one of those fancy Tibetan books. You can actually get a used book, such as a used copy of the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. The reason I like that one is that if you bow to it every day, maybe you will begin to internalize what is in the book. And you can wrap it in a nice clean cloth and put it on your shrine as a representation of the jewel of refuge that is the Buddha's teaching, the Dharma. And then finally, the Sangha. There's a couple of different representations that you can put on your shrine to represent Sangha. As you can see, let's see if I can get to the right part. There it is. There's a picture of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche. He's my Sangha representation, although I have others on the shrine. This is a statue, a small statue of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of Compassion. And as you can see, it is also filled and consecrated, but it doesn't have to be. You can use an image or picture of one of the Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. Could be Tara, the feminine aspect of compassion, or Chenrezig, the masculine aspect of compassion. And this can be your Sangha. It can be a picture of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, His Holiness Karmapa, or another guru. That can be your Sangha. So, and in addition, in one of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's teachings about creating a shrine, he said that you can have representations of the three jewels on your shrine, but you can also have a representation of the body, speech, and mind of the Buddha. And so that's another set of things you can have on your shrine to uplift you. The body of the Buddha, of course, is represented by the image of the Buddha. The speech of the Buddha is represented by the Dharma book. And the mind of the Buddha is often depicted with a small monument shape. It's called a stupa. This is a stupa that contains a small relic from Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's cremation. And so it's in the spire, vase, and base shape of a stupa, which the word means mound, and it refers to the burial mounds that where the Buddha's relics were placed in the eight great places of pilgrimage. People asked the Buddha, teacher, how do we remember you? And he said, by going and doing pilgrimage to the places where I lived and taught and so on. So the stupa then represents the mind of the Buddha. So the body is the image of the Buddha. The speech is the text, and the stupa is the mind. There are lots of ways that you can represent a stupa. One is Kempo Rinpoche said you can actually cut a picture out of a magazine, a picture of a stupa, and then put that in a frame, and that would be your representation of the Buddha's mind. Another way is to put something called a tsatsa, T-S-A-T-S-A, tsatsa. It is made. It's made of clay usually, and this one's made of plaster. And this one also contains some relics of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's cremation. And it has on it eight gold representations representing the eight kinds of stupa. So these are some sources of upliftment and inspiration. Because my feeling about this, we need inspiration. We need to be reminded of our Buddha nature. We need regular daily reminders of the presence of the Buddha in our life. And so that's why I call the shrine the location for your aspiration. And there we go. And so that's a little bit about creating a sacred space first through solitude, and second through inspiration and upliftment of being in the presence of sacred objects. And I'm going to talk more about the idea of sacred objects, not in this talk, but I'll give a separate talk at KTC at some point in the future. And then you'll be able to see such things as I'm going to give a talk about the stupa that we have out front, and talk about pilgrimage and practice in places where there are these sources of upliftment. So creating a sacred space consists of creating this place of solitude, creating this place of external solitude, a place in your house that's set aside for practice, and then also creating internal space by giving yourself some time on a daily basis to practice. And then also creating this upliftment and inspiration through the presence of sacred objects and pictures and so on about that connect us to our Buddha nature. And then I guess you could say that the final part of creating a sacred space is practice. When you do practice in a space, it really changes the space. I know that sounds a little strange, but when you go into one of the major shrines of any of the faith traditions, any of them, doesn't matter whether it's one of the Abrahamic religions or whether it's any of the Eastern religions, you feel something when you go into these sacred spaces. And I can't say with certainty because I'm not an enlightened being, but my feeling is that the reason they feel so good is because we've put a little bit of ourselves into the space. We've used it as a space for cultivating mindfulness through meditation, cultivating merit through making offerings, and cultivating awareness. So through practice, we practice mantra in these spaces. And those of you who are familiar with mantra practice, such as the practice of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, or Tara, or Medicine Buddha, which are the three major mantra practices we do at Columbus KTC, you know that when you do any of these practices, you ask for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to actually come to your space and reside there, and that you ask them to come and reside with the visualization we make. We visualize the Buddhas as either being in front of us or above us. We imagine that the real Buddhas and Bodhisattvas come from their sacred abodes and merge with the visualized forms. Then we make offerings to the visualized forms of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And by doing this, we accumulate merit and so on. And at the conclusion of this practice, what we do is that we visualize the dissolution into emptiness of all of the visualized forms. And then we rest quietly for just a few moments in our own Buddha nature. And so this kind of practice, inviting the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to be present, meditating upon them, making offerings to them, and so forth, it actually imbues a space with a blessing. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, as you know, really believed in the power of practice. And one time he was giving a talk at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra, our home monastery and retreat center in Woodstock, New York. And someone asked him whether the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas were real. And he said, I hate to do this. He said, but I'm kind of tired of people saying that the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas aren't real. He says, I'm tired of them saying that they're just like archetypes or symbols. He said they're actually real. They actually gained enlightenment deep in the past, and they want us to attain enlightenment too. And when we ask for them to be present, he said they actually come and they remain present with us. And he said, why do you think holy people are holy people. And why do you think holy places are holy places? He said, it's because practitioners practice in those spaces and invite the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas again and again to be present with their person and to be present with the space. And in fact, if those of you who remember at the end of the Tara practice, there's a place where we ask Tara to remain in the objects of the shrine, and we toss rice at the object, saying, "Benza Sutra." Sutra Tikta Benze Soha, asking for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to remain with the objects. And so, in this way, we are the third aspect of the sacred space. We create the solitude, we fill the space with uplifting things, and then we add to it our own practice. And when we practice in a space, we give it blessing, and we give it a feeling of positivity and a feeling of sacredness. So in any case, I've gone on quite a bit about creating a sacred space, but I'm wondering if maybe you have some thoughts about sacred spaces, or maybe you have some examples of sacred spaces you want to share, and so forth and so on. And so if you have, if you're on YouTube or if you're on Facebook, either one of our platforms, and you have a question, you can type it into chat. And then I'll take a quick look at the chat and answer some questions. And first of all, thanks to everyone who said good morning, and thanks for the folks on Facebook, and thanks to the folks on YouTube for saying hi. This is great. Here's a person saying, my dad and I are working on building my sacred workspace, my massage therapy room. Fantastic. I think it's wonderful. There are so many different kinds of sacred spaces we can create. By the way, this reminds me of something. I worked for 15 years as a professional writer. I worked and editor at a newspaper here in the little town of Newark, Ohio, where I live. And I remembered when Akong Rinpoche, a Tibetan physician and teacher, came to visit Central Ohio back in the 1980s or maybe early 1990s, I've forgotten. It was the 1980s now that I've said that. He said that we could even put images of the Buddha in our workspace, in our mundane everyday workspace, and that it would uplift our everyday workspace, and it would actually, those images would actually bless everyone who saw them. Because the way karma works is that we receive all of these karmic impressions from the things that that we see and hear and so on. And so he said, a small karmic seed will be placed in the mind of every person who sees a sacred object in your space. And so he told people, he says, I have some friends who are shopkeepers. And he said, and I told them, put an image of the Buddha in your commercial space. He says it will be good. So I was a little too shy to have a picture of the Buddha on my desk at the newspaper. So I had three images on my desk. One was just a picture of the Buddha's eyes from one of the most beautiful Buddha statues in the world. And it looked like an art print. And then I also had a small image of His Holiness Dalai Lama on my desk. And I also had a small image of one of my patron saints of worldly life, Mr. Rogers. So I had these three things on my desk that reminded me of my Dharma and reminded me of sacred space. And by the way, I also want to say one more thing, and that is sacred space can actually also go to your body. I wear a necklace that has a protection item on it. And I've talked about this protection item before. This is a small piece of conch shell that was blessed by Tibetan nuns in Tibet. And Kempo Karth Rinpoche gave it to us when we started our 3-year retreat more than 30 years ago. The other thing is Kemp Rinpoche gave me gave all of us in the first retreat a small white mala made of stone, and I wear that all the time to remind me of Kempo Karth Rinpoche's blessing. So a little sacred space on my body. And so it's, and also there's a, many of you will have seen the small gold pin that I wear, and it's a picture of the 17th Karmapa as a young man. And I wear that to remind me of the work that I'm doing and who my boss is. Okay, here's a comment. Thank you for this, Kim. There is a study that confirms the walls in sacred spaces are changed by prayers and vibrations of sacredness. Hey, thanks for sharing that. That's amazing. It's really always nice when we find out that there are measurable aspects to the Dharma. Let's see. Oh, that's a great one. I walk alone in the pool each morning for an hour saying my prayers. That's fantastic. You get two things done at once. Or as my friend Ray used to say, you feed two birds with one scone, which I think that's another form of sacred space, is not doing a lot of nasty swearing and not doing a lot of violent speech. So we are not going to kill two birds with one stone anymore at my house. We're going to feed two birds with one scone. But Linda, to your comment, I think it's a great thing because you get two things done at once. You get your exercise, which is taking care of the home for your Buddha nature, and then you get your prayers done every day. I think that's wonderful. And I can also reveal to you that I get my, I have lots and lots of, I have lots and lots of prayers that I have to say every day as a lama. And I get some of them done when I take my exercise walk. Let's see what other people have to say here. Oh my goodness, let's see. I'm going to read this one because it's quite large. Let's see if I can show it. Yeah, okay, it works. This is definitely true for many years now. I have had a lot of people working on my road in front of my house. First, they put in a new sewer line and they were there for probably 6 months. And now they're putting in the new water line. And so I'll read the rest of it. It says, and they've been working on it for about 3 months now. And the workmen like to hang out in front of my house. And many times I hear them say, I just really love this place. I have had many people tell me over the years that they feel peaceful, at ease, relaxed, and happy in my yard and in my house. Without a doubt, I know it is because of the Dharma practices that I do, and definitely because of the blessings and the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas I talk to every day. Yeah, I think it's really true. I really think it's true, because people will have this sense of magnetization. They'll be magnetized toward things. And I'm getting ready to add some evergreen shrubs to the back of my house, because there's a Tibetan feng shui saying that if you have evergreens, if you plant evergreens behind your house, it adds to the longevity of the people living in the house. I think we all need that at this point. But one of the things I want to do is I want to create a small grotto for a Buddha, an outdoor Buddha statue out in my backyard, and I want to make offerings to it. So I know that one of my Dharma friends does this every day, goes to a little backyard shrine and makes, in fact, I have two friends that do this. They make little offerings every day in front of their backyard shrine, and it makes a difference. Plus, those of you who are familiar with Lama Karma Wangdu, who lives in central Ohio, he was part of the team who helped us to install at the Columbus KTC in the before times, before 2016, when we had our fire. He helped us install a full set of Buddhist scriptures. I mean, not just like one book, dozens and dozens of books of Buddhist scripture in our shrine. And what he said was, he said he felt that the great improvement in Columbus's downtown, where so many new buildings were built, and so much wealth was accumulating downtown. He said he felt that it was because of the presence of the Buddhist teachings, the Kanjur, which is the all of the sutras and so forth of the Buddha, that these scriptures were actually installed in a shrine downtown. So I believe it. He told the story of when he was a young man living in Nepal, that his family and neighbors had problems. Relied upon their crops for food. And one year they had a misfortune in that the crops did not flourish. And so they went to their village lama, and the village lama recommended that they all get their texts and dress up in their finery and carry the texts in procession around the fields. And he said that the next year they had no problems with their crops. And so every year since then, they have performed this blessing of carrying the conger around their crops. That's what they did every year. And so I said to Lama Wangdu, I said, well, does this mean that we should get all of our Buddhist scriptures and take them on a trip on Columbus's outer belt? We have a ring road around our city. And he said, wouldn't be a bad idea. He didn't say, yeah, do it. But he said, well, okay, it could help. So my dream is that before we install our new set of conjure scriptures in our new center, that we would put them in a van and take them on Interstate 270 around to bless the city. Here's a question. Do statues of the Buddha need to be elevated out of respect? Well, you know, my teacher said, if you can, that's great. If you can, because it's not always possible. But if you'll notice, a lot of statues actually have a little elevation in them, because look here, in this statue of the Buddha, I have to hold it by the middle, which is not entirely respectful, but so you can see. You see, there's a base of a lotus flower underneath the Buddha. So the Buddha is naturally lifted up a little bit by this. But an example will be the white Tara. Let's see if I can use my hand, my correct hand. This image of a white Tara that's behind us, she's on a box. So I put her on a decorative box to make sure she's above the offerings. And, you know, maybe I can do a second class on shrine offerings, because as you can see, there are offerings on the shrine and then the images are above them. But if you can do it, great. But if it's not possible, you have to do what you can. And let's see. Here's another comment. I love to give spiritual gifts, which enlarges my sacred space, trinkets and jewelry, mostly tiny things that people love. Oh yeah, that's a great thing to do, because anything you can do to kind of help people feel uplifted, I think that's a marvelous thing to do. So thanks very much for offering that. Wow, we've done well. Let's see if there are any other questions hanging out in the chat that I might have missed. I don't see any that I may have missed. So as I'm wrapping up, if anybody has any last questions, you can ask them. The kinds of things you can do in your sacred space is a quiet. You can do quiet sitting meditation. You can do compassion meditation. You can do mantra meditation, and so on. And I hope that being able to create this sacred space will help you in your practice. Kempo Rinpoche used to say that if you feel like you lack focus in your practice, or maybe your practice is a little scattered, he encourages people to interact with their sacred space every day. And so that means even if you don't have time to sit in meditation in your sacred space for a long time every day, if you can even just sit for a moment in your sacred space, and if you can just sit for a moment and just do a few mindful breaths, that would be an excellent way to practice. Rinpoche didn't say that business of staying in your sacred space. That's me. But what he did say was, he said, sometimes all you have to do is look at your cushion and make an aspiration that the next time you go by your cushion, you'll actually sit on it. He did say that we can make aspirations for practice, even if we can't practically do our practice every day. We can make aspirations to do our practice on a regular basis. So I'm hoping that this talk about sacred spaces is really helpful to you. And oh, by the way, I see somebody who says, I love the idea of driving the sacred texts around the city. I think we have to do it. Not only do I think we have to do it before they're installed, we actually need to do it every year. I think we should do it every year. And just like have a good time to do it would be around the time of the Buddha's first teaching in the summer. So we can take the texts all around the city. My idea for doing this was born a long time ago, where we would put the texts in a van, and that the van would have like some kind of sacred markings on the outside, and we would actually drive it around the city. And we would stop at the four corners of the city. And, you know, we'd stop someplace north, someplace east, someplace south, someplace west, and that we would do a little program on the Buddhist center and the texts and mantra at little outdoor locations under a tent. So it would take all day to do this, but I think it would be a lot of fun. So anyway. Oh, I'm so glad people are like, they're liking this idea. Yay. we'll keep that in mind. Okay. Well, let's stop here for today. When we meet again, we'll be talking more about Dharma. And my hope is that this talk today helps to inspire you in your daily practice of Dharma. It helps you to know to interact with your sacred space, to somebody says road trip, sacred space. And okay, I have to do this. Road trip. Thank you so much. Oh, it's lovely. And so let's dedicate the merit of our session today to all sentient beings. Gathering together all the merit we've accumulated in the past, will accumulate in the future, and are accumulating now. We dedicate it all to the liberation of all beings from the sufferings of samsara. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks, everyone. Looking forward to seeing you again. Om mani padme hum. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.